Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Awake All Hours, the podcast dedicated to all corners of electronic music and club culture with me, Ali Chester. It gives me great pleasure to introduce you to today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in wherever you are tuning in from. We massively appreciate you. And always welcome around these parts. You are listening to an episode of Insights. This is Insights number 16, which is an interview series that we run alongside our regular fortnightly kind of discussion and review show, which I usually co-host with my friends and co-host Will Edwards and George Stamp. We run that sort of semi-fortnightly and basically just kind of, geek out about electronic music, sort of spotlight things that we think are cool, do album reviews, discuss talking points, and like bring in our favorite sort of like club ready records and things like that. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, you can find that Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, basically wherever you get your podcasts. Also, one other quick small thing that I have to plug very, very quickly. We are actually hosting and holding our second party as Awake All Hours, a club called Spanners in Brixton. We've invited a bunch of incredible DJs down that we really admire to come and play. That's on the 19th of August. So if you're in the area, London, UK, do check it out. Tickets are live on Resident Advisor as we speak. So massively appreciate that as well. Yeah, but anyway, like I said, you're listening to an episode of Insights. These are always really, really special. We absolutely love doing these because it's an opportunity where we get the chance to reach out to creatives, artists, label owners, basically anybody involved in electronic music. And if they are willing to take the time and come on the show, talk about what they've been up to recently and, like I say, their creative endeavors, current times, what's going on with them. And today, I'm really excited about this one because we have Parker Black and Warren Jones of Prison Religion on the show today. Parker, Warren, thank you so much for taking the time, guys. How you doing today?
Yo.
Good.
Chilling.
Great to see you. Chilling. That's great. Honestly, thank you so much again for taking the time. As I said, everybody, you know, you may know Parker and Warren as Prison Religion, who are behind one of the most intense records I have heard sort of in my life, if I'm being straight up, to be honest.
Thank you.
And we reviewed it on the show. It came out in June, and was just blown away by the intensity of that record, sort of combining elements of noise, hip hop, sort of gnarled, mangled electronics into a 22-minute blast of just unforgettable hellish intensity, basically, to do a quick summary before we get into the kind of details of the album. But yeah, Parker and Warren have taken the time to come on the show and discuss that incredible album on UIQ today, and can't wait to get stuck into it, guys. Like I say, thank you. So firstly, how are you today? What have you both been up to recently? I understand that one of you is in the States and the other in Denmark,
yeah,
if I'm right in thinking. Yeah?
Yeah,
nice. How's that going?
I mean, it's kind of funny. I was like complaining about how hot it was with Parker like a few days ago. And then now I'm like here and it's raining every day. So I'm now complaining about how cold it is.
Yeah. Getting that European hit of rain. Yeah, it always comes. Always comes. How about you, Parker? How's it going?
Going good. I'm still trapped in the heat. It's about 100 every day with high humidity.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, doing good. It's another day, you know, planet Earth.
Yeah, nice. Planet Earth, absolutely. Yeah, we got in the UK, we got like this week, it's a massive, massive occasion in the UK when the heat comes. We got like 40 degrees Celsius, like high 30 degrees Celsius for a couple of days. Everyone was panicking and freaking out. But yeah, 100 degrees every day with high humidity sounds quite challenging.
Yeah. I forgot the Celsius. Is that like, that's like 30, you said?
Yeah, I guess. I don't quite know the metrics on that. I just know when I hear like 100, I know it's high.
Yeah.
That's always like a high. Yeah.
I feel like triple figures, 100 triple is like
we like our big numbers here in America.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Amazing. Guys, so I just like to start by, you know, as we always like to on these interviews and discuss your kind of early years and the formative experiences that you had sort of musically. Where did you guys grow up and how did you begin getting into music? Were there any sort of significant characters in your life that helped get you into music early on?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start. I mean, I grew up kind of in a musical family. I had a one of my grandfathers was a jazz pianist, and he taught my brother and I how to play our respective instruments. I was a drummer, he was a guitarist. And yeah, like I've been playing since I was really little, and then started to get into heavy music, I would say, around high school. Started to get in deeply into electronic music, I would say, and after high school, around college, in my 20s. And yeah, we're both from Virginia. We both went to school for painting, and that's where we met each other.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah,
that's a very truncated version.
Nice. That sounds super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I don't have a musical family. I mean, I guess everybody's family likes music, so everybody's always playing music. But yeah, I mean, I think even, yeah, it's like high school was like hardcore music, punk music, which is also kind of how probably in a lot of ways Park and I were overlapping, obviously just because the same shows. And then, yeah, I was like kind of just sticking with like punk music and like hardcore music probably until like college, but mostly after college when I moved to New York is when I started looking at more like electronic stuff and just like different,
super interesting.
Yeah. Like, or at least, yeah, like more different stuff outside of like, even like the idea of like maybe electronic in a sense, maybe like more like the outer spectrum stuff, more like European influences than like a lot of like American, like maybe like things you would see like radio kind of electronic stuff, mm-hmm. or like even like local, I guess, would it be like local radio, like WRAR type things? So
yeah, like independent nice. Radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Richmond has Virginia has a lot of good music in general, but Richmond specifically and a little bit of Northern Virginia and Virginia Beach have a really good, like, sturdy hardcore punk scene. But a lot of, you know, growing up around here, like, electronic music wasn't really a thing. You know what I mean? Like, no one, I mean, of course, some of it comes from the United States, but yeah, it was pretty far. And I remember kind of being in the hardcore scene for a lot of years and slowly getting into, you know, electronic music, but also like rap production and electronic ways of making music, and just saw this huge void, you know, that Warren's kind of talking about, this sort of like connection that maybe wasn't there between, you know, like extreme music, if you want to say that, and sort of like, yeah, electronic things, yeah. You know, ideas, music, everything.
Yeah. I mean, definitely from like the art school, it was like a lot of like, I guess, like noise influence things.
A lot of noise here too.
Yeah. But it still was like, I mean, it still had like a very like art school kind of like, I feel like even like a little like more than DIY, like something a little like, it was like really early stages of like kind of like people fiddling around with like, yeah, like experimenting with like noise, or like Parker's saying, like trying to get out of just like the vein of like punk music, hardcore music, rap music, and like experimenting more, taking a lot more risk, I think.
Yeah, and like nice. The scene itself was very homogenous, you know, it was like a lot of like white dudes being like super mask and like, you know, just sort of pit bossing and like, and you know, just trying to run politics and stuff, and it becomes very like fratty and kind of like, what is this, you know, this isn't really about music so much as it is about like, you know, a scene or playing dress up, you know. Not in any negative way, but just like, you know what I mean, like fitting in kind of thing.
I totally get that. That's really interesting. Like with my sort of non-expert, but definite interest in, you know, both sides of that coin, electronic music and hardcore, you know, extreme music, to kind of put a general term on it. I say Richmond is a place that I would associate a bit more with, like hardcore scene and that side of that coin. Like I said, you know, which is interesting to hear. So, and also interesting to hear about how you're kind of, you know, crossing, almost kind of creating a little bit of a hybrid of those things and kind of consciously doing that. What sort of hardcore bands and extreme bands in the sort of Richmond area were you into at that time that maybe played quite a significant role in inspiring what would kind of become Prison Religion?
I wouldn't say there's anything around here that's necessarily like what we do. And there wasn't an inspiration for me sonically directly for, I mean, I think we and Warren both agree in this, but I think the sound that we've been searching for and sort of arrived on is something that we've wanted to hear for a long time and never really found. But there are a good amount of like people and bands here that have, I think, you know, affected just the way we think about sound, you know, like even what was happening. And if we want to talk about hardcore, which we don't have to harp on too long, but there was some things even happening within those confines that were kind of weird in the grand scheme of things, or kind of like, you know, idiosyncratic to Richmond. And it's sort of, people say like a Southern dirty sound, you know? And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like it's less of maybe, yeah, like looking at bands and being like maybe trying to pick and choose like how to compile this like sound from like things that we like, and maybe more of just like, I think there's like an intention behind, I think maybe like picking and choosing like the intention, I think maybe is like a better way, or like trying to like piece together like what we were seeing that we liked, not sonically, but just like maybe politically or like mindset wise, and being like, okay, well, we want some of this, we want some of this, we want some of this. And so like, I think maybe like those things like informed how we like arrived on our sound. And obviously like we started out with, there is obviously like when creating things, like I feel like mimicry, but I think we quickly like ran away from that, you know? At least it was like, you know, it's like you get your footing, and then like, instead of like sticking on that path, you like try to like, you know, create your own.
That's really cool. I hear what you're saying about like sort of almost picking and calculating sonic spaces in a way and finding how you want to fill and exist within those kind of spaces, and, you know, and forging your own kind of, you know, your sonic palette and path, really, which it certainly sounds like to me. Like I say, you know, we'll get onto this record in a moment, but you know, this, quite a lot of sort of like kind of brief touching points that I can think of sound wise and that others have picked up on, you know, in sort of review notes and things like that. But there is nothing that you can go, that sounds like this. I don't think, having thought about it for quite a while. And so that's really interesting to hear you say that.
And if that, like, we weren't thinking about that at the time, but like, it's like, how do you subvert subversive music, you know? Like, it's already
interesting
that way for a lot of people, even though some people involved in it are not kind of going in that direction, you know? So it was like, we were outsiders to being in the outsider sort of fringes. And yeah, I think that's almost like a fun place to be, you know? Very isolated, very
because we weren't really like, it's not like we're brushing shoulders with, like, we're not in New York, we're not in LA, you know, we're not even, you know, in Europe, you know? So it was like, we weren't really brushing shoulders with, we, you know, obviously we knew people who were making this kind of like music, but it wasn't like we were just kind of in our own bubble, or we would like to think we were in our own bubble.
And we were honestly, the first 2 years, I would say, of us like doing stuff in Richmond, we were fitting in and sort of making a bit of a, I don't want to say scene, but a bit of like a cohesion with like rap like rap fringe, like young, like people who are interested in rap, you know what I mean? Not like punk or hardcore stuff. It was like Prison Religion and then like rap, you know, like
like
younger kids.
It would be like Prison Religion and like Street Sex one day, one show, and then it'd be like Prison Religion and like, you know, like
Little Percy.
Yeah, Little Percy or like
or Goth Money.
Goth Money or something like that. And so it'd just be like we were kind of, but it would also be funny because especially starting out, it would people would put us kind of we would always, as you know, it's like you have to do like the opener kind of thing. But it's like I think it was just funny because we had like such an intensity and we were able to kind of like we were like in a sense maybe the best of both worlds. And at that time also it's like that was just starting to like pop off, that like kind of this like idea of like, oh, like I mean, obviously you have like Body Count and all these like great bands, but all of a sudden people are like, oh wait, you can do like have, you know, these like almost like really hard, almost like hip hop rap influenced subs, but also like with like the energy of like it's like electronic music sounding, but also like the energy of like a punk show or like a hardcore show and like still like the aggression, but also like that like camaraderie vibe. I don't know. It's just like, it was really interesting because within that it was like, we felt like it felt like something pretty new. And it was also like synonymously happening, like kind of all around the world, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Like, you know, what you're saying is kind of almost how bands maybe like Show Me the Body and Soul Glow, you know,
and we played with that's like
that sort of,
and those were the people we were playing with. It's like we were playing house shows with like Show Me the Body and then would be like, you know, it's like but also playing with Show Me the Body and then it's like we're jumping out of windows and they're like, okay, these guys are a little too much.
True story.
Yeah, true story.
Yeah, right. Window jumping galore.
He almost got in a fight at that good. Show. He almost got jumped by the audience, basically. Oh my
gosh. They're just like, hey, they literally were like, here's your money. And then we're like, okay, well, we thought this is what you guys wanted. Like, it's like the Gladiator. Like, are you not entertained? Like, we're literally jumping out of windows. Like,
I don't know, man. I feel if you're listening to Prison Religion and you're not expecting jumping out of windows and that sort of, you know, like that intensity, like, I don't know. I think you got it all wrong, you know. That's incredible. Yeah. I think that's super interesting. Like, you say that kind of amalgam of hardcore punk, hip hop, and electronic music is so fascinating to me. I can hear all through this album and your music. What sort of what electronic records and styles were really catching your interest in and around sort of college and as you were sort of saying kind of along your paths together?
That is a very big question because we probably have separate answers too.
Yeah.
I remember like, oh God, I might get, this is probably not a cringy answer because they're an amazing musician, but the one that's sticking in my head is Andy Stott.
Nice.
And a lot of just UK electronic music in general, not trying to, you know, but yeah, a lot of like UK electronic music in general, you know, like good history. And I don't even know. Like that was kind of a long time. It's kind of like almost 10 years ago at this point, 11 years ago.
Right.
But you're asking just like what was like the first kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Just sort of like, you know, what sort of, like you say, you mentioned Andy Stott there, which is really interesting sort of touching point. But yeah, was there any kind of genre like jungle, drum and bass, techno that really grabbed you initially, or maybe your kind of standout record from one of those genres that got your attention and got you into electronic music?
Yeah, there was a lot of sounds that Andy Stott made that I was like, how, you know? And I didn't know how any of it was made, you know? So it was like magic to me, and the way he was using like his basses and I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff. I mean, also there's a sort of a drum and bass producer, John, like DGOHN.
Oh, yeah, love John.
I mean,
insane.
Yeah, when I was hearing like Mac and John stuff, I was just like, because I grew up a drummer, you know, and I was like,
yeah, right.
I never mm-hmm. heard this. But that's not really related to heavy music necessarily, but I really liked how they were using sounds and Dim Dyke Stare as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're another big cool. one for me.
Nice. How about you, Warren?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny. Yeah, because we would have completely different answers. It's like, I mean, I think like early on, I'll definitely say this is probably so corny, but I mean, I really, there was like a point where I was like I felt like I knew so much like about like, you know, like rap or like, and even like being from Richmond, being like in hardcore music. And I remember like, it was like, I was 17 and I was like, I like went to this like art college thing just for like the summer to like take some like art college classes or whatever, like pre-high school, like for before college, like probably my senior year. And yeah, we had this like party and like, just like a bunch of us, like, you know, like 16, 17 year olds. And like, you know, there's like all this rap music playing. I know all the lyrics, la, 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 you know, it's like rap music. It's like, you know, or like listening to like punk music and being like, oh, like I understand all of this. And then all of a sudden Paper Planes came on by MIA. And it's
sick.
And honestly, like people may like hate on MIA, but I don't like call, like I can't remember what that album was, but like Mala or Kala, like I mean, like that was some crazy production.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Literally, like that whole album from like it's like this like fusion of like UK, and then it's like you have like a lot of like Bollywood samples, which were like crazy, but then you also have like a bunch of like African style drumming, which was like also crazy, and kind of like that like electronic scene that was coming from like Africa. But then you also have like Baltimore club music. I don't know, just like all of these things. And I was just like, I think my mind was like honestly really blown. And also just to see like, I don't know, just how one person can just like create so many styles. I don't know. MIA is really sick.
Yeah, that's a good one.
No complaints like, here. There, no complaints.
It was like, MIA era too. That. You know, like
yeah, like it's like that. And then, I mean, like things that are like totally opposite. Like I really loved like Jesus and Mary Chain, like Ride. Yeah, like a lot of like Jesus and Mary Chain, I just thought was amazing because like. Kind of the music that they were putting out that was on like CD was way different than what you like what they were playing live, and like kind of that back and forth of like, I don't know, this hysteria that like music can cause. And I think that was, yeah, I don't know. And then it's like Void, I love like, you know, Void and Faith, like all of those like old punk bands. But
oh yeah, wait, yeah, are we talking about bands too or just electronic music?
Yeah, I mean, anything.
Oh, shit.
Anything
oh,
goes.
Okay.
Sure thing. Yeah, no, that's cool. Like, it's, just, like, it's super it's interesting like, to hear anything and everything. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Weed Eater. It's like, I mean, all of those bands. I mean, Parker and I were just talking about Dave Matthews Band.
John Mayer, too.
John Mayer, yeah, right. I can't wait to get onto John Mayer a bit later as well. one of the titles of the tracks on this record. Incredible.
Another, like, around that era, too, like, I remember... James Blake's first full-length album came out.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, wow, this man is like a dub like wizard. Or like, you know what I mean? Like how is he doing dub step with like singing and at the time, it still is an amazing album.
I mean, that one song where he's like, I remember my friend showed it to me and I was like, I don't know. I was just like, oh, what is it? This song is so corny. And then I kept listening to it. And it's like the one I was like, I don't know about my dreams.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, and then it's like so quiet. And then you just hear that like
dreaming anymore.
And you just hear that like water drop, and it's just like, yeah. And I was like,
and then it's just like, and you're like, what is this? Like, I don't know. It's just
true.
Effective, you know. And another person I was really into that time, which is a little very different, but was Theo Parrish, the like
nice
Detroit house legend. I mean,
yeah,
I was obsessed with his music, but I didn't like, it wasn't really connected to anything. It was just like listening to it on a vacuum, and I was very like, how does it sound so old but so new and timeless? And
yeah,
kind of a moody man a little bit too, but
nice. Yeah, it's so, like I say, it's always just so fascinating hearing these kind of pools of influences from people and artists, because yeah, like it's just so cool that somewhere between like Theo Parrish, like Weed Eater, James Blake, you know, etc., like there is, you know, something over time kind of forms to become, you know, something singular and kind of your own. You know, I was kind of intrigued as well. I was listening back to your Nudes Radio mix recently, the one you did for Nudes here in Bristol, my the city that I live in at the moment. And I was just, it was a great mix, by the way. I love the, thanks, you know, the kind of transition through like, you know, like the body, like noise to like sleep to kind of classic 90s jungle and Lee Scratch Perry and all these kind of, you know, all these influences. Yeah, it led to such a cool listen, and again just super interesting to hear that,
but
kind
it's
of
like all
coming through.
It's all so much more closely connected than I think people want to actually like think about, you know, like I don't know, I think that's, I don't, not to go on a tirade because it sounds like you're about to ask something, but I think that's something that we just definitely try to put into practice, this sort of like unveiling that genre thing, you know, and like how connected this all is, you know, and how how like similar all sounds kind of are, you know, and voice and
like Parker talks a lot about like music is language, and I was just listening to this talk yesterday about like, you know, it's like there's noise and then sound is like intelligence, or like the idea of like understanding sound is like showing intelligence, or and like sound from noise, like those being two different things. But I think it's like all of these things are like so related, like, and the idea that like like Lee Scratch Perry could literally influence like Weed Eater, you know, and like
we definitely listened to Lee Scratch Perry before, you know what I mean, like
you know,
musicians, like,
It's like, and that would make sense, you know, it's like the idea that like, it's like Weed Eater or like Dave Matthews or like, you know, it's like, it's just like everything is like, I feel like one line, you know, like everybody is like constantly, I mean, we're moving everywhere and hearing like sounds and music and like, I don't know, it's just like to maybe not be influenced, but at least like acknowledging how like, just how, I don't know, just I feel like that line is so easy to like see, if, and all of these people that we're talking about also are like pushing things like as far as they can go, you know,
in their like, time.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think maybe that is a really interesting, like you say, you see this lineage of sometimes seemingly at face value disparate styles and genres, but there is this through line, and like as you say, that kind of that want and that kind of, I don't know, sort of urgent need or desire to push something as far as it can go, you know, is maybe a common denominator through them all. Yeah, super interesting, guys. Thank you. I want to kind of now building towards hard industrial bop. I wanted to ask, what does each of you bring to Prison Religion that is unique?
Well, I think it is unique. Well, two different people.
two different people.
To start. Well, no, to be honest, like, in terms of like vocals, you know, we're both doing vocals. In terms of production, we're both doing production. I'll probably do a little bit more mixing, maybe a little bit more finalizing and stuff. Warren does a lot of visuals, basically all the visuals. we both answer emails, which is really annoying. I don't know. I mean, you know, we both make, like, the thing about Prison Religion is, like, we don't really work with other creative people, like, not on purpose, but we just tend to, like, be able to do everything ourselves, you know? And so we just sort of exchange doing everything. I don't know if that's a foul answer, but.
No, no, that's absolutely, that's cool. Interesting.
Well, because I feel like, I mean, I obviously, yeah, we're like two different people and two different like kind of ideas and modes, but I definitely think maybe it's like, I don't know. I think maybe the uniqueness, even for like, I think, I don't know, and or what I feel like with Prison Religion and like, it's like maybe the ability to like, I don't know, we just talk a lot. And so maybe I think the uniqueness is maybe like the, like the friendship. I think some, and we've talked about this a lot. It's like, I mean, we're friends. And I think that also like, that's like something, I don't know, that like to be proud of. And like, it's like, also it's like the ability to like, you know, like listen, talk, but also be able to like, you know, like assert, like be able to work together. I think that's just like a really hard thing that people really don't understand is like, we don't have many different, like we have different ideas, obviously. And like, but I think allowing both of those ideas to exist, like, is really cool. And also like, and they can exist together and also like have like conversations together. I don't know. I think maybe those are like, that's like the unique part, I think, as like a whole, or how it comes together as a whole. But yeah, I mean, also just like, I mean, even just like musically, I think, I mean, I think, I feel like I learned a lot from Parker, just like, I mean, from like electronic music to just like understanding things like mixing, like all of these things, you know? So I feel like, I mean, we both have like different knowledges that we bring that make Prison Religion what it is. And like, yeah, I don't know.
Nice. No, that's really interesting too, because this, I really hear what you're saying about actually that kind of friendship and being able to really, really work closely together, because this album, it feels, I'm going to ask a few questions about kind of the recording process and how this album's kind of made and, you know, the environment that it was made in. But it feels like this one, like you say, two individual minds, but this one kind of, you know, tight-knit, morphed sort of, I don't know, ball of kind of sound and ideas, you know, something that's kind of can only be created and come when you have a very, very close relationship, or, you know, a very kind of, you know, a close friendship, close sort of idea of what you are, where you're going, what you're trying to achieve. I think that's really cool. And, you know, coming onto the album now, which I just can't wait to get stuck into. I'd love to talk about the creative process and a few of the kind of the sort of standout tracks and key moments on the record. So, you know, you had a couple of other really cool past works on like the likes of like Halcyon Vale, which I was really digging as well. And to me, you know, I'd be interested to get your take on it. But to me, this record feels, say it's almost 2 years in the making, this album, or around 2 years in the making. It feels like a real statement of kind of intent and a sort of step up into a new sort of sonic realm and sort of space. In those 2 years, how did your sound and vision begin to develop in the time between your past releases and what would go on to become Hard Industrial Bop?
Well, you know, it's an interesting one, because we were just getting off touring basically for a year and a half, and we had been kind of in our off time making these tracks, mostly in New York. We had a basement studio in New York, and, you know, we were thinking a lot about playing live, and we've always been trying to engineer our sound to be this effective amalgam of recorded and live sounds, and to kind of be able to give it an instrumentality to work from when we're playing live. I think one thing in the past that we have wanted to work past is feeling like we're just pressing play on the track, you know, and sort of going over top of it. And in that way, we've always mutated our own music. We've always used stems of stuff. And what we play live is a very like one of one experience, you know. And so we were like, okay, how can we make the songs themselves like not only represent that, but be fluid enough to exist in both those states, you know? And yeah, so we were thinking a lot about that, and just generally having a lot of exposure to big sound systems and a lot of electronic music, which is a lot different to experience in person, I would say. Like, you can listen to so much, but being there is what really informs you. And so there's all that. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hit, and we had I would say 70%, maybe 60% done record, with Lee. You know, Lee had already agreed to it, which is really cool. And, yeah, so it was like the rest of it was completed during quarantine and the pandemic. And then, you know, in 2020, that summer, it was pretty charged politically. There was a lot of the stuff that erupted here and across the world after the George Floyd murders and the murder and the taking down the around here, around Virginia, they were taking down Confederate statues and stuff, and which is a good thing. And it started to actually, I think, it was weird because we had like already made something that was kind of very appropriate and like talking about what was going on, you know, but it just started to have a lot more validation, I think. And so during that time, I think we had all the vocals done and stuff, but that's when we sort of linked with S280F, who is a great musician in her own right. But she helped us basically, like, I always say, like, put armor on the music, and then just generally we all finalized the tracks together. So that's sort of like a brief, you know, history of how it went down.
Yeah, because we were also like, I feel like even when we were touring and kind of like had these songs, it was kind of funny because we were just, in the mode of being like, okay, well, we got to release the tour, like get this out. Like, you know, we had just done like we had literally just released like Beachhead, and we were already kind of like figuring out what was next. How are we gonna, you know, like literally like working on these songs, already burnt out, kind of like just being like, you know. And so I think that was crazy, even with the pandemic, because it like kind of gave us a chance to like slow down and like reevaluate. But it also was funny because it's like, I mean, Hard Industrial Bop, like the name, and just like and how Parker was started talking about thinking a lot about like, I don't know, just being like kind of desensitized and like the veil of like, you know, music making and like the industry side of it, you know, and like that, like touring and like the money and like, you know, it's like, and kind of just, how that veil kind of lifts of like, you know, you're like from being like a viewer to being like a participant, you know, and in some way like a driver, you know, like it just, yeah, like changes a lot of like how you're taking in everything.
Mm.
Yeah. And we see, I think we talk about in this a lot, but we see a lot of sacrifices that are made in people's, you know, autonomy or creativity in order to play this game, you know, and thus like that sort of deep innovation or sort of sound worship or whatever you want to call it is not that, it's not that, what's the word? Like people don't cherish it. People don't value it as much, you know, it becomes sort of a, and I'm not talking about like experimental music necessarily. I'm just talking about like, I mean, all the people we were talking about earlier, you know, as Warren said, had pushed it far as they could in their time, you know, and there were probably a lot of times when people were a bit disgusted by what they were doing because it's, you know, just so like subversive or whatever, subversive. Yeah. So that was something we always think about and talk about and you know, part of the industrial part of hard industrial bop is, like Warren said, related to the music industry.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. We hear, you know, quite a lot of stories of like lockdown albums, you know, which seem to be quite a big thing, but it's interesting to hear you guys talk about like an album that's kind of 1 foot in pre-lockdown and 1 foot in post, you know, and how that affects the creative process and the way you start to look at an ongoing project. That's, you know, a unique perspective, certainly. How did Hard Industrial Bop, you've mentioned Lee Gamble, how did Hard Industrial Bop find its place on Lee's UIQ imprint? Because I said when we sort of reviewed the album that I came to this album, we've talked about this privately as well, came to this album for a review on a podcast that I love called Riot Act, and they talk about more alternative and metal leaning music. And I thought to myself, that's a really cool sounding album. I'll definitely check that out in my own time, never thinking in a million years it would get on our sort of humble electronic music podcast. But then finding out that it was on Lee Gamble's UIQ label was just like happy day. So I'm in. You know, I've got my route in. So I'm just really interested because it is, although this is easily one of the more extreme, most extreme albums we've covered on our podcast, and crosses into that bound into that sort of world, it is 100% a perfect fit for Lee Gamble's forward thinking, you know, boundary pushing, cutting edge, sort of kind of hip hop informed, electronic informed music that Lee seems to have cultivated on UIQ. So I'd just be really interested to hear about how it found its place there.
Well, I've been into Lee's music and UIQ for a long time. He was definitely one of those people I should have mentioned earlier. So I've been following UIQ for a long time, from, you know, Lanark Artifact to I'm trying to remember like the first, I think Sim maybe had an album on there, maybe not. And then, you know, like there was just a lot of interesting sounds on there that was just in the back of my mind for a long time, you know. And then fast forward to Prison Religion, we start making music, then we had a remix album, and I was like, I'm gonna ask Lee Gamble to do a remix just to see, you know, like out of the blue. And so I emailed him one day, and he got back and was like, yeah, it sounds cool. And he did a remix, which was like huge to me at the time. Like I was super juiced, and I still love that remix. And then the label, put out like an RKSS album, called like DJ Tools, I think. And I don't know, there's something about that album that like really broke it for me. I was just like, I was like, anything goes, you know? And I just appreciated that all of their album art before that was black and white. And then all of a sudden this RKSS was like a totally different vibe. And it almost sort of felt like it opened the door for that. So then fast forward, I think Zuli put out some music, who we also really love, Zuli. And then we just we're thinking about labels and stuff, and you know, we had a lot in mind, but I think one day I was like, you know, what if we try UIQ? It's a label that I really like, and yeah, it just worked. I think we were just so attracted to it because there it just seemed that they were always about music first. And so is Lee, you know, like,
yeah.
And he helped us a lot. Like, he's a great person and very knowledgeable. And honestly, like, I'm very honored to have that he was open to like working with us and doing everything.
Yeah. I feel like that's for like, yeah, even like with Rabbit and like Halsey and Veil, it's like the same way. And I think like what we gravitate towards is more like, yeah, people who are just like doing it, you know, like literally like feet on the ground, like doing it and like putting out weird shit, you know, like, like not things, you know, it's like they don't need some like not looking for like maybe something that is like commercially viable or like aesthetically has like some strong backing, but just like really things that are just like what they like, you know, it's like, I like this, even if nobody else is gonna fuck with it, like they're putting it out because they like firmly believe in like the sound and like the artists and like the ideas. And I don't know.
To add to that, like,
I get that
they're also rooted, you know, like Rabbit is rooted in where they're from and kind of responding to that music, you know, in Texas, and same with Lee and same with us, you know, like we're responding to what we know and where we're from. And we're kind of like confined to that, to be honest. I think we all are, but I think that there's sort of a alchemy to like being able to accept that confinement of who you are and where you're from, and then make magic from it, you know, make gold or whatever.
Mm. Yeah. As it says in your press notes for Hard Industrial Bop, you know, music is the thing and everything else is, you know, kind of is what it is other than that. And it seems like that's a through line between your creative output and a label such as UIQ, you know, and these types of labels where anything does seem to go, and you only have to kind of look at that label's back catalog to see that it's an incredible roster, an incredible sort of vision that Lee is building. And yeah, you fit so well into that whilst continuing to sort of widen the scope, which I think is great. Getting stuck into a little bit more of the kind of details of this album. As I've said before, this thing is, I straight up just love it, guys. I just have come to the point where I am so into this record.
Thanks.
And I've gone back to it, you know, time and time again. And, you know, the first time hearing this was, it was truly one of the most kind of exhilarating and all-encompassing and intense listening experiences I can remember. And it hasn't worn off, you know, however many listens in now, it's still got its potency. This album is quite incredible. How, you know, my first stand-up track on this thing, it opens brilliantly, you know, opens fantastically, but my first standout and just moment of what is happening here is the track Banshee Pale Fire Landing, which is track two on the album. And I love this track for many, many reasons. What I find interesting about it is the three titles almost of this track. And to me, I don't know if I'm inferring this correctly, but the three distinct movements of that track as well.
Exactly.
It goes through three phases, you know, the sort of super violent kind of gunshot synth and bass shouting of the opening movement, this spacious kind of lulling you into false kind of comfort second movement, and then just the sort of industrial beat down of the final section. It's an incredible four minutes and 30 seconds. So I wondered if you could just give a little more insight into that track specifically and the kind of environment that you create in order to create something like this, a piece like this.
I guess I'll start just because probably came from, well, the track came from instrumentals first, which is usually where our music comes from. And
boom.
That one was three different ideas that all had different origins at different times. I mean, And they sort of, it's weird. Like a lot of our music is sort of sculptural in the sense that over time, more and more is revealed and the actual thing is revealed. And then the final thing is whatever, however it ends, ends up. Usually we like know. But for that one, you know, it was, I remember Lilith, S280F was really into the end landing beat. It was just super this beat I made that was all fucked up. And so we kind of like fixed it together as an instrumental. I don't even remember. Do you remember, Warren? Like, did we do the Banshee vocals first? Did you do the vocals first?
Because I remember, well, because first we had, it's also funny because it's like, yeah, like Parker's saying, it's like all at different times. Like those were three different beats. And I remember them specifically because like two of them, we were actually playing like as live instrumentals at shows. Mm. Like, I think it was just like that ending, the like ending and the, not like the beginning, but that like the middle part with like the landing and all of that.
Palefire.
Like, I remember like, yeah, and like Palefire. And we were playing those as like live, like instrumentals, like at shows, like kind of in just like riffing or vocal, doing vocal stuff over top of it. But then, yeah. And then I remember we Parker brought the Banshee part. And then I was like, oh, wow. And it's like super hard hitting. And it was like super quick. It was like, and I remember just like recording the vocals and then being like, wow, that's a fast song. But it's super heavy and hard. And then, yeah. And then Parker, like, it's really fun. Like, yeah, Parker will be like, okay. But then he like takes it and he's like, I got to do more to it. I got to do something. Like, it'll always be like, it's like, oh, this song is sick. And then it's like, no, there's something else. And so then like,
nice.
And then from there, it's like, yeah, it's like the landing and like the Palefire part got put on the end and it was like, okay, like this is.
But even after that, then Lilith took the landing beat just by itself and basically made that section like what it is in terms of how, like with the vocals and the structure, I think. And then like after that, we had the whole song and basically sat down with the whole song and added like, she would basically take like stems from every track and like process it in her own way and then would send back one stem of all the things that she did on top, kind of.
Mm.
And so I would take that long stem, mix it back into the track and sort of cut away things that, so that's kind of how the whole album was built.
That's super interesting. I really like the expression. I wanted to talk, a little bit about S280F's, you know, Lilith's role on this album. And I think that's a really interesting way you put it of like how Lilith gave these tracks armor. I love that, the way you put that actually, like, you know, and it's a really interesting way of working. It sounds like kind of, you know, build, send over to Lilith, almost rebuild and an armor plate and then send back and then build again, you know. And these tracks do feel that way. There is just so much, like when you listen to this in headphones, there is a truly outrageous amount of things happening, you know, at any one time. It's like unbelievable, the thickness of these tracks, the stereo feel, the from the sub bass to up to the, you know, the real high frequencies. And I can kind of get an impression of how that sort of came about with you saying that. What sort of equipment and gear are you using to record this album? Is it all in the box? Is it all in a door? Or do you have any external, you know, external pieces of equipment that are integral to your sound?
Well, with just to touch on S280F stuff real quick. We really wanted to get her involved because she was really influenced by our music in terms of maybe not directly sound, but just in terms of, I don't know. She was really, really liked what we did. And we finally all became friends. And, you know, I think she's one of the best sound designers I've ever met in terms of being able to like open the mind with sound, you know, like, and I think that there's a lot of people, and I'm not trying to be like, you know, it was totally invented by her or something, but like a lot of people, I think, replicate that sound that she has, which is this very sound designy sort of post like experimental electronic music. And it was something that I was really interested in because she would make like these parts that were like intense noise with some drums and shit, and all of a sudden it would just cut into like a Dark Souls like sample that's like of an orchestra, you know. And it's like,
yeah,
I love that dynamic, you know. And I think that, to be quite honest, I was really inspired by it, and so I felt this like back and forth happening over the music. And so I think we were just like, yo, let's just like get her to join. And all of the,
yeah, because her stuff also acts like, or Lilith's stuff, like her stuff acts a lot in like parts. I mean, it's literally like a play. I feel like a lot of her music kind of is orchestrated in like these like kind of play structures. And even like her live sets are, feel like they're like, yeah, orchestrated in this like play, like, or like play, like as in like a theater play, like kind of like epic, like building. You have like these like lulls, like kind of middles, and then like, yeah, like finishing it off with like something like really, I don't know, it really works like a story.
Right.
It's really
right.
Nice.
It's got this sort of narrative that carries through. And, you know, I think that composition, you know, is something that we like really like and cherish and structure. Like, not a lot of our songs are, I don't think we have any songs that's just a loop that goes through, you know, and we just, it's like every, we have this sort of dynamic that I think we really value. So anyway, how it's made is, one thing about her that's interesting is that it's all made in the box. Like, she's just using Ableton. And I think when I figured that out, I was like, holy shit. Like, I knew the computer is powerful, but like, it really is like the most powerful machine. And so, to be honest, like a lot of it was made just in the computer for that reason, and for accessibility reasons, for the fact that we were just all in different locations. We don't have like a studio or anything. And so yeah, like it was a lot of computer, obviously vocals through mics. But if we want to talk about any kind of boring gear stuff, in my opinion, I think that kind of stuff is boring because it's, gear costs money and it's accessibility. There are accessibility issues that people don't want to talk about in music. Like, I don't give a fuck that you spent thousands of dollars on your modular system or your Electron, whatever. If your music sucks or it sounds good, that's what matters, you know? And like, so, you know, like for this, I used a lot of VCV Rack, which is an open source, like modular thing. Cause there's a lot of ways I wanted to process audio. Like I really focused on taking audio out and putting it back in different ways. Like sometimes I would take a stem and run it through I didn't have an XDJ at the time. I had like a USB controller. So I would run it from like DJ Pro software into Logic or nice. From DJ Pro into VCV Rack into Logic. And just like, in my computer, like CPU couldn't keep up. So it actually like create these sort of digital artifacts of not being able to keep up with the sound that actually I kind of ended up liking. So I would take that audio and like chop the good parts. Like our song Turret is like that whole instrumental that's how I made that instrumental, was processing it like that, like two or three times.
That's super cool.
So yeah, we were trying to think of a lot of ways to physicalize audio and model audio without expensive gear.
That's really awesome. I'm just always fascinated by, like you say, what you say, the ability of Ableton or whatever software it is, just the box, whatever is in the box.
I use Logic, and by the way, just to
interest. Oh, Logic. Sorry. Logic. Yeah. Also, like you say, just extends to any DAW. Yeah, like Logic and any DAW, what you can achieve. And it's super cool to hear about how different people ingeniously use, like you say, VCV rack, and then taking kind of like clipped samples and refeeding that back in is so cool. I love Turret, by the way. Just, you know, while we're touching on tracks, Turret is fantastic, and I absolutely love the vocal performance on that track as well. Which one of you is behind the sort of the larynx shredding verse at the end there?
And it was actually he recorded it too, like
a whole different,
really,
because it was like the first, it was like, because it was funny, because it was like the way it started, that whole track started out is like super like. It's like a super, it's like pretty straightforward. And then it like kind of like at the end, like bounces up even like higher. And then I was just like, but then it's just interesting now because it like, it like drops out. So it kind of, it's like all mangled and stuff like that. And it's like, but even for that one, it was, I don't know. I still really like, I mean, I guess now it's like not like a thing, or it's like everybody loves it, but I really like gospel music. And so I was just like, oh, it's like pretty nice to like kind of have, and like a lot of like gospel music and stuff, it's like, you know, you have like three sections or three different layers, and it's like, and creating like the cadences and like being like, oh, like, well, I'll make this one lyric like hit where like hi-hats hit. I'll make this other one hit where like the sub hits, and like kind of, because I also like, it, like when things drop out, they do that a lot in like, you know, church choirs and things where they like, you know, they like do like a timeout on the band and it's just the vocals like going, but they're filling in every single section. And so I was just like, I don't know. I love that stuff. I don't know. And also I was just like, the beat was also way more emptier, because when we first started, also we have been talking a lot about how like in Beachhead, everything was like maximalized. And so like how in this one, Hard Industrial Bop, it was going to have like way more space for like the vocals just to like live as vocals, and more of like also like using, like Parker had been talking a lot about like using space as like an instrument and just being like, and so like within that, like I was like, okay, well, I'm just like going to fill all of this up and like kind of using like vocals as like instruments. And then once Lilith and Parker like started rehashing and rehashing and rehashing, it's like subs got cut out, drums got cut out. Like at certain points, it's just noise. But it's like, I don't know. It sounds so, I don't know. Just, I love that song, even though it took like so long. And then, but then like even the ending where it's just like the, that like long, synth going through,
is really which is actually,
I love that,
funnily enough, is a Final Fantasy sample. I was,
no way,
that's, I was, so cool. I was, clearance. Yeah, no clearance. I was sitting with Lilith,
zero clearance,
and we were like, she was like, it'd be sick if it had like a pad or something, and I was like, yeah, that'd be cool, but no Final Fantasy samples and no Dark Souls samples. And of course, she uses the Final Fantasy sample as like a fuck you.
It found a way in.
But I definitely want to say I appreciate Warren's tolerance for those changes, because like it did change a lot. Like, I mean, we really just took his vocals and then like mangled everything underneath. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of trust that has to go into like changing sounds so much, or just being very drastically like, hey, this is going to get cut into, or this is going to, you know what I mean? Hit like this. And I mean, like he was saying, like I remember him being like, yeah, I don't know, like this isn't really, but you know, it just, I think I'm glad to hear that he likes it now.
But I mean, it makes it even so much more crazy. Yeah. Like, I think that's the thing. It's like, I think it's like at certain points, it's like even good. I think because you're like, even as like people making the music, you're so used to like a certain thing. So then you're like, okay, well, like, you know, like, yeah. And like being like, well, this is how like I heard it. So then like, I'm throwing this in here, you know? And like, I don't know. I think it made it even way more intense to like, where it's like, yeah, I know. I don't know. That synth is really, it was really like, just like a good
idea. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, that honestly.
I definitely was fighting that synth out of everything. I think I was definitely like,
but it's
don't
like
know.
One but of my favorite moments of the whole album. Like,
Same.
Yeah.
100%. That I think that that synth, that's so cool to hear. That's the story of that track. And I love how, you know, how, you know, sort of getting an insight into the creative process where someone goes, I'm trying this and see what the reaction to that is, and then how that can then create something really unexpected.
Yeah, on
and,
like
an outcome that's
sorry to interrupt, yeah. but on like a song that's finished, you know? Like
unfinished
that's material being like, nah, this ain't enough. Like it doesn't go far enough.
Push it
like,
further.
And to be honest, it was basically because the song was like drums and some elements, but I don't know, it just felt kind of boring, you know, like with just straight up drums. And I thought the vocal performance was amazing, and like how does it match the energy, you know, and not just be a another song, you know?
Yeah, it's so unique, the outcome to that. And I can kind of again understand how that came to pass, like as you say, that so interesting to hear you you Warren talk about the way that vocal, you know, taking inspiration from like gospel music and the rhythm and the cadence of that vocal performance. And then Parker, you know, how you and Lilith kind of restructured and tore the instrumental away, and then that synth, like you say, as it kind of soars up underneath that frenetic, you know, vocal performance, is just, it's such a moment. And what I love about this album, sorry, carry on.
That thing is so cathartic. I will say that's like such a like crazy point where I was like hearing that and then being like, oh fuck, it's like, and even thinking just about like songs and like vocals and things, like just being like, oh wait, like even words don't matter. Like, I mean, even in like that, it's like thinking about like words don't matter. Like it's as long as you're like, and like Parker talks a lot about this just because of like the jazz influence, but it's like, just being in the pocket where it's like, you know, like as long as like, it doesn't even matter about like the words at a certain point, like how does this song, how are you going to make the song sound like the best it can? You know, it's like, it's not, it's like whatever the song needs. It's like past, like, I think it's like, yeah, it's like past like ego. It's just like, is this going to make the song better? Like, oh, like if I do this, like, so what, cut that word out. It's like, or cut this out or cut this out. It's like, whatever like makes the song like the best that it can be is like, I think just like the end goal, or should be the end goal, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I love that. Also super interesting to hear, again, you go into a little bit more depth about Lilith's role and her kind of compositions as almost like sort of like plays or these structured stories, because I really do think that, again, one of the defining features of this album that sets it apart for me is the fact it's 22 minutes and it's never noise for noise's sake, if you know what I mean. Everything has an incredibly meticulously crafted sort of flow to it and story to it. And I wonder, is that sort of thing prevalent on a track such as Survival, Leave Me Alone, which is fucking hell, like a serious track. You know, it starts with kind of sirens and then this chainsaw bass, but then it kind of switches into a trumpet sample for like, you know, 2 seconds before shrieks and this like noise trap breakdown again at the end. Like is Lilith's role and kind of inspiration felt in a track like that with what you were kind of saying about her structuring?
Definitely Banshee is one. But she does deserve a lot of credit in terms of thinking about a narrative design to our music. I will say though that like I think that's been a back and forth dialogue for a few years, because like when she first, I remember like years ago, she told me that that was something that she was interested about in our music, which of course Warren and I have talked to, we've talked a lot about just like, hey, what if we put two songs into one, or what if we put three songs into one song, you know? Or And I think that we just sort of formally did that on this, like Survival and Leave Me Alone was two different songs. And
interesting.
One day was just like, hey, I'm going to see if I can put these together. And then it was like this hard song goes to like an even harder song. And it's like, I don't know. I think that there's a for us, or if you're making anything, there sort of becomes a newfound mechanism there where One track standing alone means one thing, but two things side by side means another, and three, and you know what I mean? And this becomes this sort of effect, you know? And so it was fun to be able to explore that on this album a little bit.
Awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, she released an album called 28 last year or 2 years ago. I don't remember. And I just remember talking to her a lot about that, like through the process, and just remember being really, you know, inspired and just attracted to this sort of like full immersion of what she was making. And like, there's like a whole narrative behind it that's not even publicly known. It's just sort of like, it was all written as sort of like a Bible or like a concept or whatever. And so I think just like, I don't know, just being homies with her and where we all talk about music all the time, and just like, it just kind of, yeah. And also like, if we have like a bunch of 1 minute songs, it's a way to like break it up with a few 3 to 4 minutes.
Right. I mean, I love that. It's sort of like grindcore, you know, like esque, like have like 30 second songs and then do like 2 minutes and it's like an epic.
I
like that.
And that's a great example. Cool. Like, I used to love grindcore, and it is a very, and metalcore, honestly, and they're both very dynamic sort of narrative musics, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, even thinking about things like, because like, I mean, you know, just like doom and stuff like that, you know, it's like, we've even talked about like, oh, what if we just put like one, like have two songs, you know, but it's like combining like all of this work, you know, into just like two really long tracks. And like, because also at a certain point, it's like also trying to, you know, like not mess with, but maybe like make the viewer like, you know, really work just as hard to like listen. It's like, it's like, instead of just being like, oh, I'm gonna skip through like this song or this song and like go to this song, it's like, how about like taking the whole album in as like one kind of like piece, or like, you know, I don't know, just really, yeah, like actually sitting down and being like, okay, like I'm gonna sit here and like take this like journey. Not to sound like corny, but you know, really, because those songs are like, I mean, even with like, yeah, like Survival and Leave Me Alone, it's like, it goes from like a hard song to just like a super like deep song, like from like this like kind of like harder, like grinding movement to just like something that's just like long and like deep. And that song isn't that long. Like, you know, it's like, it's still not long, but it feels like, it feels so heavy.
For sure. For sure. Like, creating an experience you just can't look away from. And I feel that with this album. Like, at no point would I, you know, dip in to this record. It's start to finish, or it's not at all, you know. And the narrative, that's a really incredible feeling.
And I think the narrative itself is created like, because we're making these songs like in the present, you know, it's like they're being changed like daily, or it's like things are happening daily. So it's like, I think maybe that narrative also comes out just from like the physical, like how these songs are being created. And it's kind of like, you know, it's not like we made an album 2 years ago and are just releasing it. It's like that album has been in like a full process. That album's been through like, you know, protests, like it's been through pandemics, it's been through changes in regime, it's been through like, you know, like government shit, it's been through like actual like life things of like accessibility to like studios or like movement or like where we've been, you know. It's like, I mean, it's literally like a reaction of like what's happening, like, you know, daily, not being like, oh, we had this album in the storehouse ready to go. You know?
Right.
So I think even like within that, it's like a story of like current events, like on a small scale, like personal level, and also like, you know, countrywide level, you know?
Yeah. So cool to hear you guys discuss it in such detail. It does. It just feels vital and on the pulse, and and acerbic and, you know, and completely gripping this sort of record, and the sort of the lyrical and just auditory content of this thing is kind of unforgettable, definitely. Really cool. I just wanted to quickly wrap up the discussions on the album with just touching on the part of the sort of bio for the record that says, in 1956, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers recorded the album Hard Bop, which helped usher in a new era of jazz at the end of bebop's reign, a response to gimmicks rather than valid developments in music at the time. And I just thought, that is such a cool basis. That was always, to me, such a cool basis for the album to kind of almost sort of, or one of the kind of MOs of the album to be birthed from. And really cool to hear you guys sort of talk about your kind of jazz backgrounds and, you know, and that inspiration coming in. I just wondered if you could just finish up by sharing just a little more insight into that particular statement regarding the album.
Yeah, there's a few connections. Like, I don't remember exactly where the name, I remember I came up with a name, but like, I don't know exactly what sparked it. I think I saw that the Federal Bureau of Prisons was BOP, and also related to us and just being, you know, prison religion. So I was thinking a lot about bop, you know, and we were also thinking about, like, there was this series here called Now That's What I Call Music. Back in the 90s and stuff. And so we were thinking like about mixing that sort of, I don't want to say aesthetic, but sort of that like sensibility with the Federal Bureau of Prisons bop, you know, sort of like, oh, this is a weird. And you know, hard bop, the relationship to hard bop, I think, was sort of like just an uncovered one that, I mean, this was before we were like we were maybe starting on some of the stuff, but it was very early on, but I mean there's not much really more to say about it. I mean, it's related because Art Blakey's a drummer and I'm a drummer, and I've always loved his playing style, and him and Max Roach were two of my favorite jazz drummers. If you've never heard Max Roach, he has this thing called Freedom Suite, which is one of my favorite pieces of music ever. And it was during an era where bebop was becoming sort of a placated, like, entertainment music, you know. It's like, it came from like intense innovation off of, like, you know, Bandstand and, or what do they call it, Big Band and stuff like that. And in the music was becoming a culture, you know, in itself, where the musicians were being able to jam like late night in these clubs. And it was this like almost like pre-hippie thing, you know, like, of course you hear about like, what are they called? The, what are the Jack Kerouac people called? Allen Ginsberg, the Beat Generation. Yeah, they were like obsessed with bebop and this sort of like new bop music, and it was very,
oh, like beatnik.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they were doing. They were like obsessed with this, like, yeah, this just open play of music in this like exchange, and that's where a lot of like the jazz musicians that we know came from, you know. And that's where like these real artists came from, a culture of entertainment and sort of background, and they sort of gained the foreground with their artistry by taking it and by experimenting with the music and by saying, okay, here's a standard. How can I take the standard to its furthest extent, you know, to where maybe one other musician in the room understands what I'm referencing, but I can play it for 12 minutes and like reverse it. And it's like a totally new idea. And it was just such a fertile time in jazz music. I think the best time. And just thinking about probably what somebody like Art Blakey was doing, you know, after, you know, being with Horace Silver and and just like being kind of sick of that kind of shit. I mean, he was also somebody who like left America for a while and was just, you know, so yeah. I mean, that's something I feel like there's some like similar thoughts, you know, there. And wildly different eras, but yeah, I just felt like there was a lot of connections to where we were and to what happened with that album.
Yeah, it was super cool.
I mean, because, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, I mean, even with that, we're still being like, you know, like, we're, I don't know, it's just like cutting a lot of like the, maybe like the ego and the bullshit out and just being like, hey, like, again, like, here's the music. Let's just like focus on the music. Let's not like focus on like the bravado or like, you know, let's not even like, like, we're musicians. Why we like, if you're a musician, like, you know, like people are listening to the music, but it's like at some point I feel like people are also have been now dictating what musicians play instead of musicians being able to like, we're in experimental, but yet I don't really see that much experimentation in experimental music anymore. You know, it's like, it's really like based now off of, because now experimental music isn't experimentation. It's actually a viable way to put yourself in a position of power or recognize, being recognized or influencer status. But it's like, so then again, now it's just becoming this thing where it's like the musician is kind of being told what to play by the audience. The audience feels like they're hearing something new, but really they're just hearing what they want to hear because, you know, it's like this back and forth when I feel like, if you're a musician, you know what's good. You know what's good music. We all like do your thing and do it well. And like those who want to hear it will like listen and catch on and latch on and like investigate. Because yeah, I don't know. I've just, and Park and I talk about this so much. It's like there's just so much music that like we hear that's just like it's defeating sometimes to hear some of the things like even that are passable, or even seeing like some like artists that like I've seen that were like, you know, doing some crazy things like early on, now are just like truncated into being like scared to lose some followers or like scared to change up their sound, like, and are just putting out bad music, like,
or passable.
You know, passable, and sorry, not bad, but like passable, like really just like boring, like it's and the other thing is like even how that translates into like a live performance, which is something that we think about a lot, and just being like you don't, yeah, it's like you go to like a, like you're hearing like a new set, like listening to jazz, you're hearing people like working off of each other, working off of the crowd, like, you know, like having this like communication, and like, you know, even within like now what me and Parker are doing with like, you know, like communicating and using CDJs as instruments, like how can we take like a CDJ and like make it something different, like, yes, like we like, yes, like CDJ is like you DJ, you can like switch tracks, but like what else, you know, it's like how can we take all of these things and like use them as tools and like actually like and just like jazz, like play off of each other, like communicate with each other, like, oh, like we want, like I want to be impressed like by Parker, like, you know, when we're playing, just as much as like Parker wants to be impressed by me and be like, oh, that was something crazy. Like, or be like, yo, that was like a good, that was crazy. Or like, this was crazy. Like, I don't know. It's, I don't know. I think, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it feels sometimes so defeating sometimes hearing and seeing things that are like happening and like, just being like, does anybody want to experiment or like, are we just now like in this like kind of money making, like,
I get you, yeah,
vertical, definitely. Yeah,
definitely, yeah. And I think that was just a super interesting way to kind of summarize and bring discussions on the album to a sort of close there with that kind of statement. And it certainly does feel to me that, as you say, sometimes it seems that making noise is quite easy, but refining, pushing, you know, trailblazing or, you know, creating something truly experimental and forward thinking is not. And I feel that you guys have achieved that on this record, 100%, you know, in really spectacular fashion. It is such a kind of, such a sort of leap and forward looking album. And it leads me to my kind of final question, which is what's next for Prison Religion? What's next for you guys? What have you got planned for the near future? Is there anything you can tell us about, or, you know, that you've kind of got your eye on?
We're going to tour. We're going to do tours in Europe, September through October. And then I think we're doing a US run November to December.
Yeah. And we might hit some UK dates. We don't really know, but we're like, yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, it's like we're trying to do, yeah, like UK dates as well and like figure all that out. But, amazing. And also just working on music.
Cool.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, playing these tracks.
Sounds great.
I mean, it's sort of like out now and it's kind of a time to like reflect and I think meditate on what we're going to do next in terms of sound. And like, I don't know. We don't really spend, I mean, in the past I would spend a lot of time just collecting instrumentals and, but I think that for this last album, we kind of did it like this. And for this next album, we kind of are more intentional with, the creation of it. So yeah, right now we're just in our like, yeah, just playing this one and writing on this one and, looking forward to like playing live and being able to like explore this album in a live, you know, format.
Oh yeah. I would love to see it live, guys. If you do get over to the UK, I'm praying. I'm praying that you do, because I'll be there.
Hell yeah.
I promise. Somehow I'll make it happen. Just can't imagine, like you say, as you said earlier, experiencing music through the headphones is one thing, but live is a wholly different matter.
Yeah, and our live sets,
I just am scared for what this record could do.
Our live sets are like way different. It's like, we're also now we're like using like two CD, like both of us have our own individual CDJs and are just like playing off. Yeah, so four, and we're just playing off of each other, which is like really fun because it just like divides like everything from like, yeah, it's just like it's just really fun because it's just like playing off of each other and being like, oh wow, that sounded sick, or like, so it makes everything different every single time. And like,
yeah
amazing. Yeah, sounds killer, guys. And look, I've kept you now for, like, we said try and keep it within an hour, but I've kept you for nearly 90 minutes, and so I'm sorry about that, but thank you so much for spending the time. It just goes to show just how much there is to unpack in this project and with your band and with the album. I feel like I could talk for, you know, for another hour and a half. Well, but I won't.
I did want to say real quick,
I need to let you guys go.
I did want to say real quick that I appreciate you and the other hosts, discourse about it. You know, like I really appreciated their perspective too, and the kind of like, they didn't want to be like, oh, this sucks,
I don't like
but
it.
They didn't want to be like, I like it. And I think that it's a really interesting, I don't know, I just appreciate that people can talk about things, and we are doing, I think, is awesome to just, you know, be able to talk about music like this. And, you know, like, I don't know, I think we were, I really wanted to do this because of that dynamic, you know?
Yeah, it was super funny.
Nice.
Also, it's like, it's cool. Yeah, it's not like, it's also cool because it wasn't just like, oh, I don't like it, and like not being why, or being like, it's like, or not even trying to understand, you know? It was like, it was cool because like, even within maybe like your co-host not being like super into it, it's like, well, I'm going to investigate it, you know? I'm still going to like, listen. Absolutely. And take the time, even if it was you being like, okay, but it's kind of because like it's like getting in a shark tank like with no cage.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
But it's
shark,
like,
is in the cage,
you know? But it's like, yeah. Which also, those were, I just like couldn't stop laughing at like just those.
Yeah.
Guys, I appreciate you. I'm so glad that you enjoyed that discourse. And yeah, like I say, I did joke with my co-hosts, and I said when we were discussing this interview and you were up for it, I said, and you didn't think you were getting away that easy. They're back, you know, which they liked a lot. And I think, yeah, it's just like, you know, it is super interesting because with an album like this, you know, I understand it's not. A lot of different people are gonna get and draw things from this in very different ways, and you know, because it is, I think that's the nature of extreme music, isn't it? You know, and it is captivating, and you can't look away. But what you draw from it might be slightly different, you know, each and every time, and how it kind of resonates with you. But I just think, yeah, it was an album that was so worth having the discourse on, and I'm so glad that we got to do this in a long form discussion as well. It's been an absolute honor and pleasure, guys. So thank you, Warren and Parker, for taking the time. And yeah, all the best for the future. And like I say, can't wait to hear this album live. If it comes to that, it'd be fantastic. Would love that. And yeah, just keep in touch and all the best, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time and everything.
Thank you.
Pleasure,
really,
guys. No
it.
Problem at all.
Really,
and
appreciate you.
My pleasure. And also, listeners, thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to this. Hope you enjoyed and hope you got something out of it, listening to Warren and Parker speak so in depth about their creative process and everything in the album. We are going to be giving away 2 copies of Hard Industrial Bop on cassette. As I speak, they are winging their way across wherever to my post box. And we will be giving 2 copies of Hard Industrial Bop away on cassette, limited to 100 copies. And it looks a beautiful thing. Awake.allhours. That's it. Can't remember my own name. Awake.allhours on Instagram. We'll be giving it away on there. Stick around and we'll see you in the next show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Warren and Parker. Take care, everybody.
Bless.
See you soon. Long break.